better world is a-coming. Tell you why. There's a better world is a-coming. Tell you why. We will feed them on the land, on the sea, and in the sky. There's a better world is a-coming. Tell you why. Better world is a-coming, don't you see? When we'll all be union and we'll all be free, there's a better world is a-coming, don't you see?
Good evening. I'm Gwen Holden Berry, and I'm sitting in for Rick Spezak, who is taking some me bliss time up in the great state of Colorado. And so I'm just a sit-in, folks, but I'll do my best. I have a wonderful guest here. And, you know, Brooke, he told me to play your intro, so I'm going to do that, if you will just give me a second. I'm going to introduce Brooke Hines. This is her intro music. Well, I did my best on the fade out there, Brooke, but that's your intro.
I'm always dancing around to my theme song. I love that song.
So you're at the Democratic Convention in the state of Florida. Tell us what's cooking up there.
Well, I'll tell you what. It was a very interesting event. It's taken me a little bit of time to let it sink in. I was up there on Friday and Saturday. I didn't attend any of the, there was three smaller events today, which were just kind of closed out the event. But I spent today kind of going over my notes and reading the press and letting everything kind of settle in and trying to grapple with what I had observed, and I have a piece that's getting ready to go up on the Florida Squeeze that is entitled "Florida's Dem Leaders Just Aren't That Into You." So this is not. It's not what I came home intending to write. It happened that, you know, I came home and I talked to my husband, and you know, gave him a sense of what my experience was. And what it was like walking around the venues, what it was like, you know, how we were met with parking, which was a nightmare, what some of the rooms were like, what the attendance was like, and we started adding everything up, and then as we started going over the press, and this one data point just blew us away, and that is, in 2 weeks, the Republican Party of Florida will hold their state convention. 12 of their 15 presidential candidates will be attending. 12 of their 15 presidential candidates will be in attendance. And we couldn't get one or two of our presidential candidates.
I got to ask you. I don't mean to interrupt, and I want you to keep your line of thought, but I got to ask you, and you might want to shake me off for this, but is there anything to do with, you know, the DNC chairman herself being a part of the Florida Dems that might have messed that up a little at all? Because I know Ms. Wasserman Schultz is going through some problems right now.
Yes, and I wonder about that myself, and I wonder what the conflict of interest is there, because, you know, she was part of the Hillary Clinton campaign way back, I guess it was in 2008. So
yep.
My question is how does it accrue to the Clinton campaign's benefit to keep such a lid on the grassroots morale, to basically crush the morale of Florida Democrats going into the primaries. We have 29 electoral votes in Florida, and Florida determines presidential politics. We brought George W. Bush to the world. We're sorry. You know,
and again,
this swing state determines whether or not there's a Republican or a Democrat that goes to the White House. And right now, the way that this election is starting to shape up, if the Republicans put up an insurgent type of a candidate, and by an insurgent I mean like a Donald Trump or a Ted Cruz or even a Marco Rubio, any of these insurgent people that really riles up their base, and we put up somebody like Hillary Clinton who has trouble riling up their base and comes, you know, to a state like Florida where the base is just sort of lukewarm, they're going to have trouble. And this, what I saw at this convention was a very lukewarm base, especially with regard to Hillary Clinton. There was almost no Hillary Clinton support there. There was no supporters. There was no swag. There was no stickers. There was one little sad table with a cutout that you were supposed to have your picture taken with. And there's a few people sporting some stickers, but it was, by and large, it was Bernie's weekend. It was Weekend with Bernie.
Oh, really?
Everybody, oh my gosh, they must have made a fortune on Bernie's T-shirt. It was the weekend was all about Bernie. All the energy in the presidential race was all about Bernie, and it cut across the age groups. It wasn't just the college age group. I'm middle aged, you know, so I saw people my age, especially wearing all the t-shirts, and people older than myself, and of course the college age folks. So the folks were definitely feeling the burn, and you know, you got the sense that there was a mainstreaming of Bernie's ideas. And that was a real surprise. I heard a lot of people wonder if the Halloween weekend might have benefited in bringing out more progressives. but I just don't know. It seems like as I was going to all of making the rounds, peeking in all of the meetings, the caucuses, and, you know, all of the scheduled events, that committee meetings and caucus meetings that have kind of a moderate or a conservative kind of base, they were just as well attended as the meetings that have a more progressive base. You know, it seems fairly well balanced, but the energy was definitely on Bernie's side, and the Bernie people were much better organized. They had two tables that were run by two entirely separate organizations.
They were enthusiastic.
Yes, very enthusiastic.
Makes the difference.
Absolutely. Enthusiastic and absolutely very prepared. So, that's interesting, too, because, you know, I talk to people kind of in the consulting class a lot, and what you hear on the national level is that the way that they think that the Clinton campaign is beating or is going to beat the Sanders campaign is on the level of surrogates and on the level of organizational strength.
Yeah.
And at least in Florida, the organizing in Florida definitely seems to be breaking for Bernie. It's not breaking for, at least at this point in the game, it doesn't seem to be observably breaking for Hillary. So it's very interesting for such a big state to be so early in the game, not evidently and obviously enthusiastically going for Hillary. And so what we started out talking about with Debbie Wasserman Schultz, you know, why is she sacking the base here? Because she's basically going out you know, the bass is like, you know, throw us the ball. Let's we'll go long, you know, and just throw us the ball. And she's like, you know, no, I'm not giving you the ball. I'm keeping the ball. And she's getting sacked. Every time she does that, she gets sacked, and we lose morale.
Yeah. You can tell. Yeah, it's nationally tellable.
And just makes you wonder what's going on. And so my sense is that this convention, especially when I came home and I read that the Republicans are going to have 12 of their 15 presidential candidates, and we can only bring one. So when that happens, you know, the morale was already bad coming out of this event because people thought the whole weekend that they were still going to be surprised. People paid $250 to see Claire McCaskill do a keynote at dinner. And it was Claire McCaskill and all of the three Senate candidates. Claire McCaskill was the headliner.
I read that Claire McCaskill was going to be their keynote speaker, and I thought, what the, you know. And correct me if I'm wrong here, but she's a blue dog. I mean, she's more right than right. It just didn't make too much sense to me. And I wondered if Wasserman Schultz was even there. I had to search and search to find any kind of news tag. And, yeah, go.
She absolutely was. Debbie Wasserman Schultz addressed the General Assembly, the convention itself on Saturday morning. And, you know, she's a good speaker. So she came on and kind of kicked off the General Assembly, the convention, which really isn't a convention because we don't have a straw poll and we don't actually vote on a platform or anything. It's just, we listen to speeches. It's one-way communication.
Yeah.
And it was really interesting because the very first thing she said was she did this big apology. She did this big defense of having the convention at Disney year after year because people were complaining about Disney's employment policies and not having sick time and how expensive it is at the yacht club, the optics of having it at the yacht club, so on and so forth. So she did this big defense of Disney and how wonderful Disney is for gay rights and you know, did this big identity politics defense. And folks were like, yeah, identity politics, yeah, but I think people feel like we've won on those issues and we're moving on to economic issues now. Now is the time, you know, Bernie has kind of set out this economic agenda, and we're talking about $15 minimum wage, and we're talking about sick time and paid maternity leave and these types of issues. And so going back and backpedaling to identity issues, it seemed very strange. And you could tell that she was pivoting the very first thing in her speech. So instead of kicking off her speech, she did this very odd defense. So she had heard that she was being criticized, and instead of just ignoring the criticism and moving on, she got kind of prickly about it and was like, "Well, I'm just going to be defensive and you know, put that down and make sure that the you know, people know that this was the right thing to do because gay rights or whatever."
Okay. That sounds like she wasn't very prepared.
Well, then she launched into what seemed to be a very well-rehearsed kind of stump speech. She landed on all of her notes, you know, like a gymnast who hits the ball and lands on the floor and puts her arms up and, you know, just lands it. Talked about gun rights how we have to do gun control and a lot of social issues that are, important to the liberal base. And she speaks about these issues passionately and in a way that gets people up on their feet. She sticks to the social issues, and rarely does she venture out into economic issues, and that's pretty much the way it goes.
Whoa, really?
Yeah.
Staying away from the bankers, huh?
Yeah. And then interestingly, the rest of the speakers. Now, I will give some credit to Allison Kant, the Florida Democratic Party chair. There was a panel with the SEIU president. It was on working Americans issues and the Fight for 15 campaign. And they talked about the minimum wage challenge that just has been going on. And she also put up a couple of candidates, and one of them, Carlos Guillermo Smith, who is running for District 49 over here in Orlando for the state house. And he's a true progressive, and he followed on Debbie Wasserman Schultz, and a lot of the things that she talked about in defending Disney, he's worked with Equality Florida for a number of years and been a lobbyist for Equality Florida. He brought all of those issues back around and made the economic case for wrapping that around and saying, look, this is not just an identity issue. These issues have a they are whole justice issues, and the economic piece is a part of it, and you can't separate the economic piece from the identity piece. And for him to follow right on Debbie Wasserman Schultz and deliver that message was very powerful. If you were sitting in the audience and heard him say that, you were just like, wow, I can't believe you said that.
That sounds positive to me, but you know, wow.
It was very cool. He's an up and comer. He was the Democratic Party chair here in Orange County. I really can't say enough good about Carlos. He's a tough campaigner. I think he's going to win. He is one to watch. He's young and he knows what he's doing. And I think he's going to be a fabulous legislator and a fantastic progressive.
That's good.
So you were asking about the Senate race earlier, which when I first came home, that was the lens that I was looking at everything through, was you couldn't ignore the fact, walking into the hall, that this convention was all about Patrick Murphy.
That's corporate. That's me.
Yeah.
I mean, this is my opinion only as a guest commentator here or a guest host. I just see him as wrapped in corporate money, and that happened real quick.
Uh-huh. Well, yeah. And it is when I first walked into the hall, the sense that I got, it's something about his collateral, and it's something about his presentation and the overwhelmingness of his presentation. There was so many people that he had on the floor, so many people carrying his signs like little stormtroopers, that it felt overwhelmingly corporate. Like the kind of thing that you would expect at trade shows. I used to do commercial real estate trade shows, and it was the kind of over the top thing that you would expect in that kind of realm. In like commercial real estate, which I think he's familiar with,
yeah.
As a matter of fact. But it just hit you over the head. It was overwhelming, and at first I thought, well, this is his campaign just kind of going overboard, and then you know. You kind of settle in a few hours and you realize, no, this is the Florida Democratic Party actually kind of taking part in this, because
yeah.
there was actually a press conference where Barney Frank came in and endorsed Patrick Murphy, and actually had some pretty fairly nasty things to say about Alan Grayson, that he
really
doesn't believe in the political system and stuff.
Whoa.
Yeah.
That's kind of a positive push for Mr. Grayson. I mean, he made his bones as being as someone who's very independent of all of the mechanism of the DC mechanism, as it were.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And again, notice the juxtaposition of identity politics with economic politics. Barney Frank is a perfect messenger, again, for identity versus economics, and that's a game that the DNC has been playing for quite some time, especially with regards to Wall Street.
Yeah.
The other thing that was kind of funny is that they put Patrick Murphy's table right in the middle of the hallway, where it was inevitable that you would pass by it to pick up your credentials and your badges and stuff. You had to pass by the table to get in or out of the room to register. The Alan Grayson table was way at the very end in this like alcove, where unless you were leaving to go smoke a cigarette or something, I mean, like you had to be on your way looking for the Alan Grayson table specifically, and you had to know it was there to go
really?
And be there. It
really?
Was so obviously placed way out in the middle of nowhere. It was just on purpose. It was madness.
Well,
and
what about the other candidate? Where was
Pam Keith was placed actually in a very high traffic area. There was two separate kind of expo areas, and that's really giving them way too much credit. But there was two tabling areas, and one was near the they were both near where meetings were held, and there were two separate little meetings on opposite sides of the main conference hall.
Mm-hmm.
Pam Keith was on the opposite end, where there were smaller rooms and there was a lot more activity. So interestingly, I think that Pam Keith's table got a little bit more action, even though it was a smaller table and she's a candidate with a lower profile, because there was just a lot more activity around her room.
Did you meet her?
I did. She is a very compelling speaker. She's a very compelling candidate. Not only did I meet her, but I spent some time at her table, and I got to see how people were reacting to her, and especially progressives, This is what I heard over and over again, was progressives were coming up to the table and they were saying, I am so tired of the grappling in the mud that I'm seeing between Patrick Murphy and Alan Grayson, and I was so refreshed to hear what Pam Keith has to offer. And the way that I read that too is that they were very compelled by her manner of speaking, because she is such a compelling speaker. I think everybody should go to her website and check out her actual policies on things, because you know she doesn't get very specific into what it is that she believe and what she supports. She's really good at just sort of talking about things generally. She takes this Obama approach where she kind of puts this halo on and she says, we just need to not do things the way we've been doing them. And I'll agree with that. Everyone would agree with that. But go read her stuff and see if you agree with it, because not everyone is going to agree with what she says. And I do believe that there are some things in that she believes and that she talks about in her policy and stuff that aren't as progressive would like to see. But she's very good at presenting herself progressively. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do. Well, there's the big compromise that happens once you're in office. And no one ever speaks to that at all. They lie like hell to get in office. But do you get any kind of sense that Pam Keith is presenting her information in a way, yes, progressives are not hearing everything they want to hear, but perhaps she has a progressive push to her, and she's just going to put it on the table as she sees she's going to have to walk in. Does that make sense?
You're basically asking, is she what you see is what you get? Is she authentic?
Well, yes. Is she authentic, and is she trying to say very out at the beginning, this is how it's going to be because this is how I get my foot in the door? Does that make sense?
Yes. I think she's done the same calculus that Barack Obama has done, very similar, that, you know, here's who I am, here's my demographic, here's the very high profile seat that I'm running for, and the reason why she's running for a Senate seat is that her forte is foreign policy. So that's the slot that she wants to fit into. Her father was an ambassador, and you know, her background is all foreign policy based. So the Senate is what she wants to reach for that reason. So the way that she's presenting herself is very moderated, because she knows that that's the way that she's going to be able to reach her voters, especially being this kind of outsider candidate. And,
yep.
She's impressed the Tampa Bay Buzz. She's impressed the political writers across the state. The news, the coverage coming out of the convention for such a low profile candidate and for someone with so little money, I was floored when I got up and read the news this morning. I could not believe what a bump she got off of the speeches last night. And in addition to just what I was witnessing at the table yesterday, and like I said, I was sitting there talking to my colleague, Cardit, and we work on the Florida Squeeze together, and I was just kind of sitting there to bat around ideas for stories, and we were bombarded with people coming up wanting to know more about Pam or to get on the mailing list or, you know, just to get a shirt or a hat. And,
wow.
Yeah, we couldn't get any work done. Basically.
So she was really getting some attention.
Yes. Yes.
Oh, okay. And Alan Grayson, what kind of attention was he getting?
Well, Alan Grayson did this thing where he gave out these checks, and these were little graphic design checks, and they said to Mitt Romney from Patrick Murphy, in the amount, I guess it was $2,700, and the idea was you were to understand that this is a check from Patrick Murphy to Mitt Romney in the amount of the maximum donation to a candidate for the last cycle for when Patrick Murphy was a Republican. And I love that sort of thing. Like, I'm an Alan Grayson fangirl. I love that sort of thing. I love Taliban Dan. So I'm going to love that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Not everybody loves that sort of thing. And so that's the kind of collateral, the kind of piece of campaign literature that is going to divide some people, but it's also the kind of thing that is it's classic Alan Grayson. And so when that hit Saturday morning, people were just like, wow, it was just, it made a huge splash, and some people totally hated it, and some people totally loved it.
Okay, so it caused a bit of a stir. What about Murphy? How was he hitting people?
Mr. Murphy is quite a character. You know, he's young and he's very commodious. He talks to everybody, even though he knows that like for instance, you know, people in the Progressive Caucus aren't going to necessarily vote for him or, you know, be enthusiastic about his events, and he'll still, you know, try to bend their ear and be like, oh, whoa, why don't you come to my party? Kind of like a frat boy like that. Like, oh, you still should come to the party and, you know, have a drink or whatever it is, you know.
Yeah.
You know, want to do. And he just kind of got to go like, well, he's tenacious. Whatever. Like, you want one more person at your party? Really? Like, there isn't already going to be 500 people if, you know, your mixer or whatever it is at 7 o'clock. So it just seems like everything I observed that Patrick Murphy was doing seems like overkill. So every time we turned around, there would be five people walking shoulder to shoulder, all holding Patrick Murphy, like yard signs, but like those like candidate convention signs, you know, that you hold up at the convention or whatever. And they'd just be holding them, walking down the hall together like stormtroopers. And it was kind of creepy.
That is pretty creepy. I can see that in my mind's eye. My God.
Yeah.
Nah.
And even if it was just like one guy here and two guys there, they would be so inauthentically and obviously holding their Patrick Murphy signs. And I had this mixture of feeling sorry for them, like, are you getting paid? Do you really feel that way about this candidate? You know, is it that important to you? Do you feel like he's that vulnerable? I mean, like, what is the mindset here? Because we're all Democrats here. Do you really feel like you need that much of a push? We're all supposed to be in this together, or whatever it is. And yet, there's a very strange vibe. And, you know, again, it goes back to Debbie Wasserman Schultz. It seems to me that everything could go down a lot differently if there was a different kind of conversation. So instead of having this one-way conversation at a convention like this, you know, where one candidate is the favorite son and another candidate or the other two candidates are, you know, except for they're invited to the dinner to speak, which isn't always the case. If we remember from Nan Rich a couple years ago. You know, just play it fair and straight up the middle. Just, you know, let's stop with all of this, you know, funny business with, you know, having the surrogates and a wink and a nudge and, you know, having your favorite people that you want to, you know, use these events to promote. And that kind of leads into this other piece of the story that I wrote, which is every headliner that came to speak. There was Claire McCaskill, Barney Frank came to speak on behalf of Patrick Murphy, Amy Klobuchar, and I probably mispronounced her name again, Klobuchar, gosh, I transpose those letters every time. who is actually one of my favorite senators. I think that she's pretty wonderful here on MSNBC quite a bit. Everybody who came to speak at the convention came as a surrogate of Hillary Clinton. Not one big name Democrat came as a surrogate or was invited as a surrogate of Bernie Sanders. And I can't help but think that that wasn't just an oversight. That wasn't Debbie Wasserman Schultz going, you know what I should have gotten? I forgot to get a Bernie surrogate to come and speak on his behalf. That's Debbie Wasserman Schultz being, bringing one home on for the team. And it seems in bad faith to, not just to me, it seems in bad faith to who are interested in Bernie's message, and even the people who maybe aren't interested in Bernie's message, but who are Democrats who are interested in equity and in fair play. Because it doesn't read as fair play to people.
I hear you. I understand what you're saying. That it seems as if it was the boat was listing to one side.
Absolutely.
Whoa. Keep talking, Brooke. A little kitchen sink production here. I have to get the puppy. I am so sorry, Brooke. It would have gone on too long if I didn't stop him. So, it seems like you're describing a convention. If it were a ship in the water, it'd be listing to the starboard side, as they say, instead of having something cruising along that you could walk both sides of the boat on.
Yes. The Progressive Caucus came kind of prepared for this with the Senate report. You know, we saw this direction. We saw the party going in this direction with the lead report, and earlier this year, in late May, June. The president of the Progressive Caucus, Susan Smith, and a couple of the executive board members said, you know what, we should do our own follow-up to the LEAD report. We could really do that. And we've got enough people with enough experience in the Progressive Caucus to, people who have experience in field and party operations and working in DECs. We could do a follow-up, and we could really talk about implementation. And they brought it together. And we did a workshop. We worked for months, actually, before this convention, and then did a workshop to finalize things. And I actually did the design and the pagination, the document production, and we released this the day of the I guess it was Friday. The event, and it's meant to be kind of a training, kind of a facilitating document to help people, to take them from the lead document to the next steps, how do you go from wanting to do better field and turnout or to do better candidate recruitment to actually doing better candidate recruitment and doing better field and turnout. And it follows the six areas that the LEAD report follows, so that it's easy to compare both the documents and to go from one to the next one, and it's meant to be a starting place. It's meant for campaigns and for counties that are interested in stepping up their game. Pull this out and read it and assess what they're doing take these ideas as benchmarks and go from there to add to them and hopefully maybe, you know, massage these ideas back into the party so that we are building these strengths back into our structure so that we're becoming stronger. Because right now, it almost seems like we're weak on purpose. It seems like when I go to an event like the convention this weekend, and I see what Debbie Wasserman Schultz, what her strategy kind of is, the way that she's kind of moving us around on the board there, I see that she benefits when we're kind of weak. She benefits when there's less of us, when Democrats are not building the base, when we are a little bit weaker than we could be. Because if she wanted us to be building the base, she would have brought out Hillary Clinton. She would have brought out Bernie Sanders, or at least said Martin O'Malley, you know, or Hallie, Lawrence Lessig. Lawrence Lessig, anybody.
That's what you said there is a pretty sad commentary, and it really calls for a questioning of who's running the DNC completely, too. Because she's provided for a lot of infighting that hasn't been around for a while on the national level. And if you watch her responding to the accusations on national networks, it's like, wow, can we see through you? You know, I mean, her answers are to deflect like she's a, dare I say it, like Carly Fiorina deflecting the Planned Parenthood video, you know?
Right.
It's
very defensive.
It's very sad, and it does, as you say, anchor a weakness in the Democratic Party in the state of Florida, and it bleeds out into the other states too. It's as if she thinks all she has to do is fly a flag for whatever candidate, being Hillary, I suppose, and that's all there is to the job.
Right. Well, the Republican Party put out a statement earlier this weekend on why they thought Hillary didn't show up, and they said her absence at the convention is a clear reflection of the lack of momentum and grassroots organization that Florida Democrats have going into 2016. That's pretty stinging, right? Like,
it sounds pretty true, too, doesn't it?
Yep, absolutely. And they couldn't have done a better job at wrecking Democratic morale if they had done it themselves.
Wow. Well, I think you can thank Wasserman Schultz for that one. When Alan Grayson got his moment to speak, what was the thrust of his speech?
Well, he's been doing this stunt that is reflecting on his achievements and outlining Democratic values and setting up the case for why he should be sent to the Senate. So it's this meat and potatoes kind of, you know, here's what I've done, here's who I am, this is why I need to be sent to the Senate. I'm going to say conservative, but I mean it's a conservative approach to doing a stunt in that it's not taking any chances. He's just telling his story in the very most simplest way possible.
Well,
and that's what
practical. Very practical. Okay.
Yes.
Which is
absolutely
something that you want facing that Washington. I mean, whether it's the House or it's the Senate, you need practical approaches because these people don't know what they're doing up there.
That's right. That's right. And you know what? Pam Keith is messing up his calculus here because that practical approach is working against Patrick Murphy. That meat and potatoes approach is going up against Patrick Murphy's meat and potatoes approach, and it works. You can compare those two candidates, and Alan Grayson comes out on top. And then Pam Keith comes along, and she can take this kind of Barack Obama approach and say, and use her very compelling presence and, you know, kind of come around from left field and say, you know, I want to do things differently and talk about our narrative.
Well, mm-hmm. Brooke, I got a question for you. Is Florida and its Democratic Party, including the, you know, activist yahoos like myself and quasi-anarchist and the progressives and the regular Democrats, are we voters for the Democratic Party that would adhere to Pam Keith and her message above the nuts and bolts of these two other candidates who have one has some time in, but it's clearly wrapped in corporate flag. And then Alan Grayson, who has made a name for himself I like Alan Grayson. I like what he does. I like how he stands up and says, F you, this is the truth. You know, and if he has to do it with a graph that's ridiculous, he'll do it to put the point across. Yet he's walking into the Senate, so he's coming at this practical approach of, I know how to get the job done. I know both ways. This is who I am, and I'm telling you I'll practically get the job done. But does Pam Keith have that kind of an audience here, even using a Barack Obama approach?
She doesn't have it yet. It's up to her to build it. I worry that she doesn't have the money to get over the finish line, but there's a lot of time between now and when we vote. So it could still happen for her, and she wants it back. So
wanting it back makes all the difference, too.
Mm-hmm. Yep, it sure does. It sure does.
Are there enough companies and organizations that she can get to who would be willing to back her over Grayson or Murphy?
That's a good question. I have no idea how to answer that. The thing to do is, I would say talk to her campaign person maybe next week, and Kartik would be able to give you a better idea of where they're at on that organizational side. I just have no good feel for any of that. I have more of a feel for this real kind of subjective narrative piece because I only got to see a tiny peek into the Pam Keith world and in relation to the Patrick Murphy and the Alan Grayson narrative. And I'm impressed. And everyone's impressed.
Well, that's big. That's pretty big, actually. I have to play an ad here for a moment, then we'll come back. And I wanted to ask you one last question about issues and whether or not any issues were actually addressed. Just one moment for Joe Beck.
If you're trying to live a good life without gods or religion, you might be a humanist. Let's ask Joe Beck, founder of Humanists of the Treasure Coast, how he describes humanism.
Thanks, Rick. Humanism is basically a philosophy of life that encourages us to lead ethical lives that contribute to the greater good of humanity. While humanists are not religious, we aren't anti-religion, and we think it's best to keep government and religion separate. We value compassion guided by reason and use science rather than supernatural revelations to learn about the world. Humanists of the Treasure Coast is a non-for-profit organization that provides discussions, social events, weddings, hospital visits, and other services for individuals and families in the Stuart, Vero Beach, and Jupiter, Florida areas. You can visit Humanists of the Treasure Coast online at humtc.com. That's humtc.com, or call 772-934-6167. That's 772-934-6167.
Now the Charlie Chan movie will play. It's the music. I was like, wow, where'd you guys get that music? That's so really, really retro. Brooke, I'm wondering, did you hear anything about issues like the expansion of the Everglades, fracking, anything like that come up?
So we're in the part of the party, the official, you know, push from the party. What was given time at the convention was the economic agenda. So that was like the Fight for 15 and the minimum wage challenge.
Okay.
The Everglades and the environmental and those type of issues are definitely being worked on. They're being worked on the realm of the clubs and caucuses. This is why it is so important for folks to get involved in the environmental caucus, if that's where your interest lies, if that's where the real work is being done, or the progressive caucus, if that's where you want to, you know, put your energy. The environmental caucus, by the way, is red hot right now, especially with the fracking and the Everglades and what's everything that's going on. Now is the time to step up and get involved in the environmental caucus. They could really use your help.
Great. It's good to know that that's at least dangling somewhere on the chandelier, you know?
Yeah, and I'll tell you another thing. The newly formed disability caucus is fighting really hard on the medical marijuana. So anyone who's interested in who has a disability or is interested in disabilities and wants to get involved in medical marijuana through the party, the Disability Caucus is the way to do it. They're very well organized. I deal with chronic pain issues, and it's actually something that I don't talk about a lot, but it's something that I wanted to talk about because I've dealt with it since I was 17. And I've got a lot of stories of dealing with doctors and stuff, and I think that Florida would benefit greatly from passing medical marijuana. I mean, just from having the high population of seniors that we have, I think that it would be a fantastic thing for the state. So the Disability Caucus is a fantastic place to put pressure on for that particular issue.
I want to let you know we've got about 5 minutes of airtime left, so please hit any of the points you really want to drive home tonight.
So go to the floridasqueeze.com, and down, I have a concept there about the STEP report that I posted on Friday. The STEP report is what the Progressive Caucus put up on the strategy and tactics for electing progressives. This is our report that we did for the Democratic Convention. At the Florida Squeeze, there will be a link that will take you to a copy of the report. You can also go to the Progressive Caucus webpage, which is progressivedemcaucusfl.org, and you can get the report there as well. And also just keep an eye on the floridasqueeze.com, and I will be posting my Florida's Gem Leaders Just Aren't That Into You here very soon.
Great. Great. You brought a lot out. I really want to thank you for especially accepting me for your host tonight and giving us the lowdown of what's going on. It's one thing people really should be aware of is the problems that the Democratic Party is having in the state of Florida vis-a-vis the weakness that's there and the disorganization that's going on. The lack of not having a national candidate is really disheartening. And mm-hmm. it speaks to all, not just progressives, and I think you categorize my activist crowd as progressives too, don't you?
Mm-hmm.
We're part of the progressive end of it. I guess that's where they stick us when they don't know where else to. But I'm joking, of course, Rick. the thing is that we really need some unity. We need some party cohesion. We are a swing state in the nationals. But we also, when we're not together, we're not thinking about all the local elections, which are so important, and it's the only way that this country is going to change.
That's right.
So thank you.
The Republicans have been playing that game since the 80s. They have been working on the municipal level and the state level since I was in college, and it started with the Christian Coalition. And, you know, we in all of that time, we've been losing all of those elections. And that's why we have Rick Scott. That's why we have a super majority of Republicans in the State House in Florida. And this is why everything is such a wreck. But just because everything is such a wreck at the party level doesn't mean that Democrats have to be miserable about it. And we don't have to follow suit behind Debbie Wasserman Schultz. We can look her in the eye and we can say, you know what, you're wrong. We don't have to do it that way. There's other ways of doing this. Now, step aside. Go away.
<Agreed.
laughs> Yeah. We're going
to
do it
differently. Go back to the other desk and give somebody with a good gavel the hand. Yeah.
That's right.
That's absolutely correct. I want to thank you again for being here. I know I'm thanking you for both myself and Rick. And as I know, Rick will be listening into this sometime in the next few hours or days. Hope you're having a wonderful time in the state of Colorado, where, by the way, marijuana is not just medically passed, but it is legal for people to partake in. And it is a big pain reliever for many people who can't any other way. But it's paying for the state's infrastructure and contributing now to the education system, the sales of marijuana. And that's pretty important.
That's right.
Just want to put that little plug in. Thank you, Brooke.
Thank you, Gwen. This was fun.
I hope to talk to you again soon. And and if you want to catch me, I'm just this show, I'm just before Progressive News Network here on Blog Talk Radio with the Sunday show with a progressive, a conservative, and me, you know, bitching about the whole thing all the way down the road. Have a great time, Rick. Rick will be back next Sunday. And Brooke, again, thank you. And that's our show for tonight.
Awesome. Good night.
Good night.